are on the line. Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7, or online on FoxSports3.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line with Lance Daw and Noah Gardner on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope it's going great for everybody out there listening. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial, or you can text us at 334-564-1840. Auburn getting a huge win over the number 10, at least at the time, ranked at number 10, the Ole Miss Rebels on Saturday. We're going to give you our impressions of that matchup. Going to talk about everything else that happened across the college football landscape on Saturday. Going to talk a little Atlanta Braves baseball. You know, we can't help but do that here on the show. We're also going to have Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports later on in the show to talk about Alabama. Could be some interesting things coming down the pipeline as the season continues to roll on with the Crimson Tide. Looking at that Iron Bowl, it's going to be real important in a few weeks. Noah Gardner up in Sylacauga today. We're talking to him through Skype in the mothership. Noah, how are you doing? I'm doing really well, Noah. Today's been fantastic so far. Really excited to talk about this 31-20 win over Ole Miss that Auburn had on Saturday. I want to start off the show giving some of our impressions of Auburn's win against the Rebels on Saturday. It was really nice, really refreshing. I've been up in the press box for every home game this season, and this game I was blessed with the ability to go sit with some of the fans and get to experience the game right there instead of being stuck in the press box. And let me tell you, it was a fantastic sight on Saturday with all the lights and in the crowd. I will tell you, it's not, I wouldn't say, maybe it was where I was sitting. It was not the loudest that I've ever heard Jordan-Hare Stadium in person, but it was certainly rocking. And I think the momentum and the energy that the crowd had certainly was a factor. Lane Kiffin mentioned that in his press conference after the game, talking about how important the crowd was in this affair. But impressions from this game, want to start it off with, you know, starting with this quarterback position with Bo Nix. It was another one of those games where I'm looking at him like, okay, he's still playing the best college football right now, I think, of his career at this point. You look at his numbers, 22 of 30. He had two rushing touchdowns, had a passing touchdown to Jarquez Hunter as well. He's been playing really efficient as of late. You could also attribute that to the defense as he's been playing. But at the same time, Bo Nix focused and having fun was one of my impressions from this game.
Bo continues to show his development as a passer, which is really exciting. He made a check at the line of scrimmage that resulted in a big play that may have been on the first drive, but it was definitely earlier in the ballgame if it wasn't the first drive. But he comes up to the line of scrimmage. He goes on a hard count. An Ole Miss linebacker jumps up to the line of scrimmage. It was obvious that he was about to blitz based on the look that was given to him. He makes a check at the line. You can see him make the hand motions. You can see him change the play. He alerts everybody around him. He checks into a play action pass. And guess who's wide open? His tight end. I think it was Luke Dill who made the catch. It wasn't the best throw in the world, but at the same time, that's the headspace. That's the intellect that Bo Nix is now bringing to the table, and that's the responsibility that Bo Nix now has in this offense that I don't think the previous coaching staff gave him. For a while this season, folks have been looking for evidence. Folks have been looking for reasons why people think that Bo Nix is taking a step forward, and this is a reason right here. And there are other ones throughout this ballgame, stuff that Bo Nix continues to do where I'm like, wow, that's new, or wow, that's great to see him continue to do that. Another example, the wheel route pass to Demetrius Robertson. In the past, you look at Bo Nix or quarterbacks across college football, a lot of quarterbacks will stare down where the play's supposed to go. I believe firmly that that play was designed for Demetrius Robertson. But Bo doesn't stare down Demetrius Robertson to see if it's open. He looks off the safeties in the middle of the field where you have two shallow posts or two lazy posts going down across the deep sector of the field. He looks the safety off, and nobody's over there to go and cover Demetrius Robertson because they think the play is going to the middle of the field or to the right third of the field. Instead, it goes to the left third of the field. There's another example of Bo Nix making a play that veteran and experienced quarterbacks make, and just not your average Joe in college football, not your average quarterback in college football makes those types of plays. Bo showed, and those are just two things that really stick out in my mind of like evidence that Bo is taking the next step. Those are just two instances of many where you continue to see Bo play great at the quarterback position.
He's continuing to make the right decision more consistently. And like you mentioned, he's not staring down anybody. He's going through his progression. He's making his reads, and he's finding open guys. Auburn had 10 different players with a catch on Saturday. And I think you're starting to see this receiver room develop a little bit, right? We got to see, like you mentioned, the shot to Demetrius Robertson, a couple of throws to Kobe Hudson in space. These guys were getting open downfield, and Bo Nix was finding them. You're starting to see this receiver room get a little bit more chemistry with their quarterback now that we're heading into November. And again, we've talked about this a lot on the show. It was a question in the offseason. Not having a number one receiver, is that going to be good or a bad thing? Look, if you've got five or six guys that are legitimate threats to catch the football, and you've got four or so behind them that you can go to as safety valves on different plays to keep the defense guessing, I think that's a good thing right now for Auburn. Demetrius Robertson is continuing to develop. We saw him catch a 35-yard pass, like you mentioned, Noah, in this game. Would love to see the vertical aspect of this Auburn passing game continue to improve. And like we were talking about last week, I think the team is still adding new wrinkles to this offense. It was something that was talked about last week, and I think we got to see a couple different wrinkles in this game. Again, just really impressed with the performance by Bo Nix. These receivers were getting open. A lot of different guys caught passes. The couple of plays to the tight ends specifically, to Luke Deal and Tyler Fromm. You mentioned the one to Luke Deal, and then the throw, I believe, was essentially to open the second half after they got a stop to Tyler Fromm, that 31-yard catch and run. Just really, really nice play calling from Mike Bobo. And I know that a lot of people are going to, when they think of Mike Bobo, think of that Penn State call, that fade on fourth down. But I think overall, Auburn's coordinators have continued to get better and better as the season has gone on. And the play calling specifically from Bobo has gotten better. Speaking of play calling just in general from these coordinators, this is another impression that I had. Auburn's defense in the second half of games this season continues to stiffen and make adjustments. Derek Mason, while a lot of people may be upset with maybe the amount of yardage Auburn's giving up or whatever, he is continuing to call very solid games in the second half of matchups. Also want to point out that Auburn has given up a little over 2,800 yards through eight games this season. 2,848 yards. That's 24th nationally. So it's not like they're just bleeding yardage to everybody that they play. Sure, maybe it's gone up a little bit on average in SEC play, but they're not as bad as I think a lot of people think. Also, you know, there are other things coming along inside this unit, which we can get to later, like the pass rush and Papo is back. We'll get to that later on in the show. But overall, another impression that I had is not only was Bo Nix clicking, not only were the receivers clicking, but Mike Bobo was as well. And then you look on the defensive side of the ball, I think there were some really good calls that were made by Derek Mason.
I'll start with the defensive side of things there. Auburn is giving up 24 points per game. In conference play, Alabama is giving up 24.8. Mississippi State's giving up around 24. Texas A&M's giving up around 22. A&M actually has the best defensive mark in conference play among SEC West teams. Auburn's right there with those teams in conference play. Auburn fans are used to what the defense looked like under Kevin Steele, but Kevin Steele also had the benefit of Derek Brown and Marlon Davidson and an elite defensive line. And the more and more that we get away from those two players, the more and more that I also appreciate those two players, and the more and more that I see that maybe that defense didn't quite perform to the level that it should have with those two players, because I think Auburn's got elite linebackers right now, but not an elite defensive line. Their defensive line, to me, is good to great at run stopping. It's not awesome as far as pass rushing is concerned. It's fine. It's not awesome. They're not getting a home a ton. Now, granted, they've played some mobile quarterbacks the last couple of weeks, but this obviously isn't the defensive lines that we've seen or that we were used to under Kevin Steele. But these defensive lines don't have the same players in the same elite talent that those lines had. And I think Derek Mason is doing the most with what he's got, or he's getting to that level. I don't know if he's maxed out potential with this group, but as far as talent is concerned, his scheme is working. It's not giving up points. And so if people are frustrated with the yardage that they're giving up, we knew coming into this game that Ole Miss, due to their scheme, due to their talent, I said this a lot last week, there's four or five guys on any play that can touch the football and do something big with it. You just don't know who's getting it and how they're getting it, and that's how good this Ole Miss scheme has been. It's very difficult to stop. You can only hope to contain it. We knew that Auburn was going to give up yards, but I thought Auburn made Ole Miss have to sustain long drives, and they were unable to sustain and finish long drives for a large portion of the ball game. They may have been able to move the ball a little bit and totally conjure up, you know, 464 yards or whatever it was, but they also did that on 81 plays. They also had a large portion of the time of possession. They didn't have the majority of it, but for about through the end of the third quarter, Ole Miss and Auburn were very tight on time of possession, which is not what you would expect. What that tells me is Auburn didn't give up big plays. They made Ole Miss have to play a style of offense that they don't like to play. Auburn did a very good job of containing Ole Miss's offense in this game.
And I think that's really what we were kind of hoping Auburn would do heading into this matchup. The joke was kind of, you cannot stop this Ole Miss offense. You cannot stop Matt Corral. You can only hope to contain it. And look, whenever you're getting 464 total yards of offense, you should probably score a little bit more, I think, than 20 points per game if you're being efficient. And Ole Miss didn't do that in this game. So Auburn was able to get stops when they needed to. They converted 40% of their third downs did Ole Miss in this game. That's literally right at their season average. So it was not like Auburn was getting big time stops on third down. They were just making Ole Miss work the entire field. They were making them run the clock a little bit, and they were bending but not breaking whenever they needed to. And point being, especially so whenever they got a turnover. I believe late in that game, Jalen Simpson got himself an interception. Just this Auburn defense coming up clutch consistently whenever they've needed to. Like you mentioned, I don't think that this defensive line is terrific. I think they're good in certain areas. They've been able to get a little bit more pressure than they were last season, I believe. I don't know. I don't have the statistics right in front of me, but it looks like they're getting a little bit more pressure than they did last year. But I will say these linebackers have been playing pretty darn well. And how about Owen Papo? I believe he only had four tackles in this game, but the fact that he had five, but the fact that he was back in this game, it's just another energy. It's just another energizer right there on the field. It's another presence for Auburn. He made a couple of big plays. I do remember. I believe he had a tackle for loss in this game. But yeah, he was flying all over the place. Jacoby McClain, I believe he earned co-SEC Defensive Player of the Week after his performance. 14 total tackles, I believe. 67 on the year for him. Auburn right now, look, their defensive line may not be fantastic, but their linebackers are really helping them out. And with the way that this game is performing, like you mentioned, Noah, I think that with Derek Mason and what he's doing right now, he's doing the best that he can with this scheme and with these players. And until Auburn finds themselves, and I want to kind of, I don't want to be harsh, or I just want to kind of be realistic. Until Auburn finds another generational talent like Derek Brown to play on the defensive line, I don't think we're going to see, as Auburn fans, this defense return to Kevin Steele form whenever he was at its best, right? I just don't think that's going to happen. Now, will the defense be good moving forward? Yes, and I think it was good in this game for the most part. But I just don't think until Auburn gets that type of Derek Brown type of guy, we're not going to see that, and that's okay. I think that's okay because, like I mentioned again, Auburn's defense is bending but not breaking in the most important moments.
I think they're one game changer away on the defensive line from being those defenses, if not better. Once again, Auburn's giving up 24 points per game in conference play right now, and I'll go do some research throughout the show, and I'll get this to folks before the show's over. I'm going to go do some research to see what they were doing in conference play in years past. But the thing is, those lines, we got used to seeing Carl Lawson and Montrevious Adams, and then we went from that to Derek Brown and Marlon Davidson, and then you had Jeff Holland thrown in there too with those guys. Like, we got used to some really, really good defensive players on that defensive line. And just right now, that's not there at this point. They're still performing at a high level. We also have to look at the scheme. A 3-4 scheme, you're going to rely more on your edge rushers, which end up being those guys are outside linebackers in the NFL. In college, you may look at them kind of as defensive ends, but it just depends on the defensive scheme that you're looking at. Auburn, they're kind of more of outside linebackers. You're looking at more of a 3-4 defense and a stand-up edge guy. And Auburn just doesn't have an elite edge guy right now. I think they're good. I'm not saying they're bad. I don't even think they're average. I think they are good. It's just, and you can go and look, they got pressure on Matt Corral. Matt Corral was 21 for 37 in this game. He only completed 57% of his passes. They got some pressure on him. They also didn't overcommit. I liked that they didn't overcommit. I was happy that they dropped back into zone coverage. The secondary played an excellent game. Didn't give up anything downfield, 21 for 37. Matt Corral was 57% on his passes. I thought the whole team played really well together, and everybody's just being asked to do their job and contain. And right now, everybody's doing their job. That's the thing. Everybody's doing their job. When you have two players that are SEC Player of the Weeks on defense in the same week, and Colby Wooden's an SEC Defensive Lineman of the Week, again, second straight game for Auburn that that's happened, and then Zacoby McClain's got 14 tackles, like, people are doing their jobs, and that's really all you can ask for. I think people are still comparing this defense a little bit to the previous defenses that we have, but as you said, there were generational talents on that defensive line, and just give it time. This coaching staff's got to go find those players, and I still don't think this coaching staff has fully, they've imprinted their culture on it, but I don't think they've imprinted fully the image of their schemes and their idea and their style
right.
on both sides of the football. I still think that, you know, you got to give them time to go and recruit that out over a period of 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I agree with that, absolutely. And look, I'm not sitting here saying that it's not going to happen. Like you said, this coaching staff, I believe, recruiting-wise, they will get that type of guy eventually. But as of right now, I don't think we're seeing the model of the type of player that they want on their roster just yet. I think they've got great players on their roster overall, but it's not the guys that they want in their system. I think we're just going to have to give it a few years before we see this roster transform into what Brian Harsin and these coordinators and this staff wants. And eventually, I think we are going to see that, and I'm really excited to see it, because it's something that was brought up on the broadcast a lot, was just how hard-nosed and physical and fundamental this Brian Harsin team was. And imagine the fundamentals in the toughness and the aspect of that team combined with raw talent of 4- and 5-star guys coming down the line. It's just really exciting to think about. It's very similar to the way that I view Auburn basketball, which, by the way, they've got an exhibition game this Friday. Y'all ought to go check that out. Whoever's listening, if you want to go check out that game, would really encourage you to. But it's the way that I view Auburn basketball and the fact that I love the way that this team operates outside of their talent, because we've seen Bruce Pearl excel and generate chemistry with guys that aren't those 4- and 5-star guys. But you start to bring in the Walker Kesslers, the Jabari Smiths of the world, and it's like, man, what could this team potentially look like? So it's just really exciting to see what they could do down the line. But overall in this game, really impressed with Auburn's performance. Let's get to a quick break, and on the other side of it, we will continue to give some of our impressions of Auburn's 31-20 win over Ole Miss. You're listening to On the Line. Back on the Line, Lance Daw, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. If you want to call in, give your thoughts on Auburn's 31-20 win over the Ole Miss Rebels, 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. If you want to talk about the Braves, if you want to talk about Auburn's game against A&M this weekend, anything going on in the sports world, you can call us or you can text us at 334-564-1840. Want to continue to give some of our impressions from Auburn's 31-20 win over Ole Miss. I want to briefly here, well, I guess not briefly, because we'll touch on the entire category, special teams here. Demetrius Robertson muffing a punt. Anders Carlson missing a field goal. Not particularly great in a game where, you know, anything, any turnover, anything like that could really boost the other team's momentum. Thank goodness Auburn's defense was able to hold in this game in certain parts. But there were moments in this game where Auburn had opportunities. I've seen a lot on Twitter about Ole Miss fans saying, you know, the Rebels had so many opportunities to win this game. Look, I think Auburn had so many opportunities to put this game out of reach, and there were just different times where they didn't capitalize. And I think special teams occasionally had its bump in the road.
100%. I've talked to people with different perspectives on this game than my own, which was that Auburn commanded this ball game from start to finish. really held an 11-point lead for the majority of the ball game, and it could have been worse if it wasn't for a couple of key mistakes. A fumble from Kobe Hudson, the muff punt from Demetrius Robertson, missed field goal from Anders Carlson. The second half was mistake laden, I think. But I want to talk about special teams as well for a second, and I'm going to bring it out with a positive hot take. And I really don't even think it's a hot take. I just think people aren't talking about it as much as it should be. But Oscar Chapman may finish his career as the best Auburn punter ever. And I said that a couple of weeks ago with you guys in the studio, and I can't remember if it was Sting or Belichick, but y'all were like, nah, Stephen Clark is really good. I was like, yes, he was good, but Oscar Chapman's the real stinking deal, and he's doing it in his first full year as the starter at punter. And we don't talk about this often, but this really is, like, he is smashing what Stephen Clark did as a punter in his, like, best season. He averaged 56 yards per punt in the game for Auburn. That is outrageous. And it's not just distance either, because a lot of kickers outkick their coverage. It's not a good thing. He's got hang time and distance, accuracy, the ability to deaden a ball inside the 20-yard line. Oscar Chapman, and look, I've only been on this earth for 24 years, so I don't want this to be hyperbole, but of all the punters that I've seen, and Auburn has had some good ones, I think Oscar Chapman's a great one. He may very well be the best punter that I've seen at Auburn, which, I mean, isn't a huge accolade, but still, I think he's very, very good at what he does. And I'll say on this team, he is, with little doubt in my mind, he is the best specialist on this team.
65 yard long. For Oscar Chapman last night, like you mentioned, 56 yards per punt. It was something that Sting and I were talking about during the break. And Sting, if you had something there you wanted to share, go ahead and do so. But yeah, Oscar Chapman's been phenomenal so far this year.
No, I didn't have anything to say. I was just, you know, I heard my name, Noah, and
heard it called.
Heard him call me out a little bit,
out.
Which I can't
called out specifically.
Yeah, I can't disagree with anything you said there, Noah, and I would not. Just say, oh, well, yeah, Stephen Clark's the best punter I've ever seen, and nobody can ever top that.
Yep. I mean, and Oscar Chapman's playing great right now.
Right, he is. He's demonstrating to me why he's a very good punter.
Well, we're talking about the positives here on special teams. You know, obviously there were bumps in the road, but not only was Oscar Chapman good, how about Nehemiah Pritchett as a return man so far this season? Had 96 yards, 32-yard average, had a long of 46. Sean Shivers also had a couple returns in this game. Auburn, you know, it was a question, I believe, that was brought up in the press conference with Brian Harsin just a little bit ago about catching, like calling for fair catches. And I think he essentially said that's not our mentality. So we're going to be bringing it out. And I love that. But Pritchett so far, you know, he's not been the most explosive return man in the world. But one of these days, I think he's going to break one that's a little longer than 46 yards. And we saw the potential in this game.
I agree with that, and you had a lot of negative. The downside to what was happening in the return game is the penalties. There were tons of penalties in the return game, and that's what killed you. Another negative in the special teams game for Auburn. Look, I like Anders Carlson a lot, but I think he's regressed a little bit this year. I don't know what's going on. Last year was excellent for him. He's back to what, and maybe not on the same level, because 2019 was not going well until the end when he had a great game against Alabama, but right now, Anders Carlson, I don't think there's hope to win the Groza anymore. He's 13 for 17 on kicks. Were you like a kicker? Like, what do they add to the team? Because pretty much any college kicker, if you're good, you should be able to hit with consistency from 40 to 49, which he is, but he's also missed a few, namely one this past weekend against Ole Miss. He's 6 for 8 on kicks from 40 to 49 yards. He's 0 for 2 on 50 plus. He really hasn't hit a kick this year where I'm like, and he does have a long of 49. I think he's got a few 49-yarders, which are impressive. But, like, on these, like, big-moment kicks, I just don't think that Carlson has had too many of those this year. He's missed more times than not. And at this point, it's becoming unreliable on longer kicks for me. I'm getting uncomfortable now when I see him trot out.
I agree. And it was something that I think we discussed a little bit this offseason about whether or not Anders Carlson would be able to take that next step, hitting 76.5% of his kicks right now. Yeah, I agree with you. He's just not been able to really get it done this year. And you know what? I don't want to knock on him too hard because, you know, he has made some field goals for us in the past. But I also will say we've got a pretty solid kicker coming in. next season that just, I believe, set the Alabama State record for longest field goal in high school history at 61 yards. So I'm really excited about what Alex McPherson is bringing to the table next season.
100%. That 67-yard field goal, just an absolute moonshot. But yeah, the special teams, I think, has been a concern in some areas where it has also been a strength in others. From a defensive perspective, the defensive elements of special teams this year, Auburn has been very good. Punting has been excellent. Defending kickoffs. Kick coverage is great, whereas it had been a major weakness for the past 2 years prior to this season. Defensive special teams has been excellent. Offensive special teams has been, more times than not, it has been a negative this year. There's been a missed extra point from Anders Carlson. He's missed some key clutch longer field goals. You've got penalties on the return game a lot of times this year without really busting any long ones this season. There's been more negatives on the offensive side of things of special teams. There's been only positives on the defensive side of special teams. You'd like to see the offense come along a little bit, but I'll be real with you. I don't think it really is this year. I think this is just kind of what you're looking at.
I agree. And I also will say, you know, overall,
but it's also not bad.
Right. Overall, like I mentioned earlier, and we've been talking about this for a while, like this football team overall is disciplined. I think they're a lot more disciplined than they were last season. And it's something that you have pointed out time and time again throughout these weeks in college football, Noah. This team seems to be getting better every single time they step out onto the field. They seem to be getting better in a lot of different areas. And if they continue to clean things up, who knows? We could be looking at that Iron Bowl as a very important pivotal game at the end of November. And we'll talk a little bit about that with Jeremy Law on the other side of this break. You're listening to On the Line.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Back on the Line, Lance Dahl, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Again, if you want to call into the show, 334-321-1390 is the number to dial, or you can text us at 334-564-1840. We are now pleased to be joined by Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports to talk a little bit about the Alabama Crimson Tide. Alabama taking their bye week this past weekend. Jeremy, overall thoughts on Alabama's bye week?
It was a quiet bye week. You didn't hear a lot out of practice. The real talk of the bye week has been what's Alabama going to do on the offensive line, and can that offensive line improve? And where that, you know, that's still up in the air. Alabama's bye week consisted of, you know, watching some good college football over the weekend. The Auburn game was a great game to watch. Georgia continues to be dominant. If anything, if you're Alabama, you were able to sit back and look at what could be two potential opponents down the road. And Auburn's getting better each and every week. Georgia continues to just, I mean, they're dominating everybody they play. Good football team. So, you know, there's a lot up in the air for Alabama, but Alabama's still going to have to get better. They needed to get better in the bye week. And I think Alabama fans, for their sanity, they need to see it in a dominant way against an LSU team that they're a 28.5-point favorite over this week, and a 6 o'clock kick in Bryant-Denny Stadium. Alabama fans want to see their team come out and dominate, guys.
That's what I was about to ask you. Is like, man, they could really use a bounce-back type of game, even though it feels like they've been winning, or at least they have over the past couple of weeks. Like you mentioned, 28.5-point favorites are the Crimson Tide. What do you want to see out of this game against LSU, and how do you think LSU is going to approach an Alabama team that really wants to prove that they are still at the top of college football?
Yeah, I think the point spread, guys, it tells you that maybe Alabama fans are just hitting the panic button a little too much. They're not as dominant as they've been for the last couple. I mean, let's take it back to last year. If Alabama fans based this year's expectations off of what Alabama was able to do last year, which was the best offense in college football history, a 10-game SEC schedule, ran through the playoffs, and really played one truly close game, beat everybody else besides Florida by 15 or more points. If that's your expectation, you were going to be let down this year no matter what. I think the point spread says that the people who are in charge of making these lines, they respect Alabama, and the people that are betting on these games still respect Alabama enough to bet that Alabama will beat somebody by over four touchdowns. That's still monumental. Now, will Alabama get it? I don't know. I think they're 4-3 against the spread this year. They're not like Auburn. Auburn is cash with the spread this year.
Great teams cover.
If you're betting the spread, take Auburn. I mean, Auburn, they're -4.5 this week. I don't know if does A&M win that game. I don't know.
Good teams win. Great teams cover.
Yeah, you know, it's easy to say that. Great teams also don't lose two games against really bad offenses. But, you know, we can talk about that a little later in the week. Noah, I've had a little
really
fun.
Bad. Did you just say Georgia has a really bad offense?
Man, they scored 6 points on Clemson. Stetson Bennett's rolling around. They're not great on offense. They pound you to sleep.
Scored 3 points on Clemson.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they didn't play great. But I think Alabama, they have to get better up front. You want to see the DBs play a little better. Since the A&M game, the defensive line has been phenomenal. I thought Henry Toto and Chris Harris put together their best back-to-back performances all year against Mississippi State and Tennessee. And if you're Alabama, you're thinking on defense, if we fix mistakes on four plays, they may not score 20. They may not score 17. So if you're Pete Golding, you want to get that fixed, and you've had 2 weeks to look at LSU, figure out what they're going to do. And from the LSU perspective, guys, man, Ed Orgeron, the way he looked in that Ole Miss game a couple weeks ago, it was like, man, you guys are losing, not me. I mean, he's just on the sideline, willy-nilly. Looked like he didn't care, just letting Lane Kiffin clown him. And I'm just not sure how motivated they're going to be to come out in this game. I mean, what motivation do they have other than to beat Alabama? They probably know that's not going to happen. I mean, what are they motivated to do? Stingley's gone. The receiver, Boutte, he's hurt. And it will probably be on another roster next year, if I had to guess. So, you know, it's just
Miles Brennan's in the portal as of today.
That's what I'm saying. Is like this team has no motivation. I would not be surprised for Nick Saban to take what Alabama did last year on their field and continue to roll it over and Bryant Denny after what Ed O did in the locker room in Tuscaloosa 2 years ago.
It's the weekly time for me to be able to get you to kind of rant on this Alabama offensive line. I think they are going to be tested. The Alabama O-line will be tested by the good LSU pass rush. You can't lie with stats.
Nobody gets pressure with four better than LSU in conference than maybe Tennessee. Tennessee, I mean, they're really good at tackles for loss, and they got them against Alabama. They had six in that game. I didn't get the sacks that they wanted. They had pressure on Bryce, not able to get them. But LSU gets pressure with four. So what's Alabama going to do? People may get pressure with four against Alabama, which means you have to leave a running back or a tight end in the backfield to block, which really means you might only have three guys running routes against seven, and that has been a big problem for Alabama because John Metchie's getting healthy. Jamison Williams is now above Chris Olave on Mel Kiper's big board with the season that he's having. But, you know, Slade Bolden's probably not a threat to anything. So if you're Alabama and you're running J-Mo and John Metchie being double-teamed, or maybe sometimes triple teamed, and Slade Bolden's your third option, that's not going to work if you're having to leave a running back and a tight end in the block four guys. They've got to get better up front. Still would not be surprised if somebody else was that right tackle coming into this game. We'll see.
0 to 10, confidence level, all right, that this – trying to figure out how to phrase this. 0 to 10, how uncomfortable are you that this is going to be closer or you are going to be disappointed with your team's performance – after Saturday ends?
You know, I heard Aaron Suttles from The Athletic talking, and he said he had to talk to his editor because Alabama is 7-1, ranked number 3 in the country, played a horrible game at A&M, still dominated the stat sheet. You know, I think had 150 more yards than those guys, still probably should have won. They had a lead after playing as bad as they did, had a 38-31 lead. He had to go talk to his editor and say, am I being too hard on these guys? I think that's Alabama's problem is, there are 130 other football teams, maybe outside of Georgia, that would say, man, I'd love to be Alabama. And Alabama fans are freaking out. I think the coach and staff offensively has lacked a little creativity to really put these games away. Last year, Sark against Tennessee, start of the third quarter, get the ball, the game would have been over. Bill O'Brien wasn't able to get it done in that game, wasn't able to end the game versus Florida. So I don't know. I think that probably a 3. I don't think that I'm going to be disappointed in beating LSU or anybody else in the fan base, but you want to see your team beat teams that you're supposed to beat and not struggle. You don't want to see Bryce get hit. Chris Owens is going to get Bryce Young hurt if this continues. And if Bryce Young gets hurt, I might go to Tuscaloosa myself and with a picket sign and say Chris Owens has got to get out of here. Because if Bryce Young goes out and Alabama goes into another Iron Bowl without its starting quarterback or super banged up, I'm going to lose my mind. I am.
I told you you were afraid of this year.
But a lot of other people are too, and they see it. And you got to be asking yourself. And I heard Bill O'Brien was at a Red Elephant Club dinner maybe a couple weeks ago, and said, you know, Chris Owens, from playbook wise, is the best we have, which makes sense. He's a fifth year guy. Of course, he knows the offensive line playbook. He's done it, but he knows it, and he's still not able to block the guy in front of him. What are the odds that you throw J.C. Latham out there? And Auburn has seen this. Everybody has a player like this every year. You throw him out there, and it clicks, right? What are the odds that you do it with J.C. Latham, and it works? It clicks. Or maybe he doesn't know who he's supposed to block every play, but he at least hits somebody, chips the defensive end without getting a free rush onto the quarterback. I think that's something that Alabama has looked at. Actually, I know it is something they have looked at in this bye week. Who knows if J.C. Latham was able to get over the top, or Damian George, who also saw time earlier this year at right tackle. But you never would have imagined that going into this year. Now, they lost three starters on the offensive line. Deontay Brown, who knows what that guy's doing, probably should have came back for a COVID year and raised his stock a little bit. I mean, it really would have helped Alabama out. But we'll see what Alabama does on the O-line this week. And I still think it's incredible through 8 weeks what Bryce has been able to do with a team that is like 100th in sacks given up and like 86th in tackles for loss, and he still has the numbers that he has.
Well, you mentioned it, and I want to talk about it a little bit. This Iron Bowl, the narrative is out there, all right? Auburn is no longer, they are no longer under the radar. The cat is out of the bag. They are 6-2. They control their own destiny in the SEC West. As an Alabama fan, looking at that matchup, I know that Auburn's got a ways to go. They've still got to beat A&M. They've still got to beat Mississippi State and South Carolina. But how are you feeling knowing that that matchup is looming at the end of November?
The Iron Bowl is – the week leading up to the Iron Bowl, is it resonates in the minds of the people in this state in two different ways. For Auburn, every year it's hope and, well, we may not win. This is Noah last year. Well, I know we're not going to win. He didn't even talk the whole week before the game. But if you're Alabama, if you're Alabama, guys, the Iron Bowl is not fun. You're expected to win, and if you win, nobody says a word. If you win this game, nothing is said. If you win this game, you go to the SEC title game, and everybody hopes that you lose that week too. So nobody gets excited when you win this game more than maybe 3 or 4 days. You'll never hear about it again. Greg McElroy's comeback is like lost in the midst of six national championships from 09. If Auburn wins this game, it's going to be miserable. And Alabama fans, this is a day where you just want to get it over with, hope to God you win, and move on. It's just relief. For Auburn, Noah's, he walks in the office this morning and said, Auburn's beating Alabama. He did. He said it. We were at the coffee pot right behind
us. I was messing with
him. He said, oh, they're winning. And I'm not saying they're not going to win. Now, there's a lot of scared Alabama fans out there right now, for sure.
And you're one of them.
I'm on
You're
edge.
Uncomfortable.
Is it, Nick?
It's another 9-2 Auburn team in Jordan-Hare Stadium. The stars are aligning. And a first-year head coach, might I add.
Gene Chizik was a first-year head coach. He didn't win the game. I mean,
made you uncomfortable that year.
Gus Malzahn was there's only one of those first-year head coaches that won this one over the last three. I mean, Harsin still has his shot. Auburn is getting better. Bo Nix, who I said was going to be improved this year strictly because of an offensive system. So Auburn's really not doing anything that I expected them not to do. They're really not. I said I thought 8-4 could easily be 9-3. I mean, and I thought Bo Nix would be much improved. I thought they'd be sitting behind two teams in the SEC West, which was Alabama and Texas A&M, and right now this week's a coin flip. Auburn's kind of right where I thought they'd be. Third-year starting quarterback. If you want to win in college football and you don't have a great elite team, you need a guy with 25, 26 starts. And that's what Auburn has in Bo Nix.
You're looking at this Auburn A&M game. And look, I know that I mentioned the narrative is out there, but it almost feels like too many people are talking about Auburn getting to the Iron Bowl and that being a huge matchup. I don't think enough people are talking about this week's game against Texas A&M. And while sure, they got past Ole Miss, they still have to get past the Aggies. In your mind, how do you see this matchup shaking out from an Alabama perspective, as somebody who doesn't necessarily care for either of these two teams? Looking at it from the outside, how do you think this game is going to go down, and can Auburn get it done?
I think Auburn can definitely win this game. Alabama should have won their game. Noah comes in the office this morning. Auburn has never lost at A&M, and I had to remind him. And neither at Alabama. Alabama never lost there either.
No, and I think the words I used is College Station is a children's playground. It's not hard to win there.
I tell you, Auburn has they lucked out. This isn't a night game there. No, somehow Alabama got the night game. Auburn gets the 2:30 kick. They'll still be loud and they'll still be crazy. A&M's just coming along. I mean, they truly did. And I've listened to a couple guys, and I think I was listening to Feinbaum, one of their guests, and he said A&M, starting with that Alabama game, they changed their offense. There's motions involved. There's stuff that they didn't do that while they were trying to get Zach Calzada ready that they weren't doing against Arkansas and Mississippi State. And they roll in Alabama, and they just said, if we want to win games, we got to put it all out there. And their quarterback has adapted well. Now, is Zach Calzada a great passer? No. Is he going to start out 16 of 17 against Auburn? No. But A&M's a good team. I wouldn't be surprised if Auburn wins this game. I wouldn't be surprised if A&M wins this game either.
My take is Auburn just held Ole Miss with Matt Corral. Granted, Matt Corral may or may not have had both of his ankles, but
and they were missing their center goes out the week before. Still, 40 starts lost, 2 missing offense. I'm just saying.
Still, they held Ole Miss to 20 points.
That's right.
All right. Even with all of those things, Ole Miss still has a better offense than A&M with Zach Calzada at quarterback. And you know that's true. A&M, I just don't see how they put up more than 24 in this game. And I think Auburn should, with the way the offense is playing right now, should be able to easily eclipse 24.
Alabama beat Ole Miss too, and I'm going to ask this question. Is Ole Miss's offense the way that we thought it was after the Tulane game? They were losing.
It's definitely not, but it's still good.
They're down 35-0 to Alabama. They get shut out of the end zone in the second half against Auburn. Did they get 30 points against Tennessee, who has his defense? They
scored 31.
Good. 31 against a really bad team. Lane Kiffin, to me, he might end up what people are thinking coach of the year after the Tulane game. He might be bust of the year, and he's not getting the LSU job anymore. You kick a field goal in the second half, you make it a one-score game. That's written in stone. And Lane Kiffin just continued. He blew the Alabama game doing it. Matt might have blown the Auburn game doing it as well. But I think that A&M's good. I think Auburn is getting better. It's going to be a tough place to play. And if Auburn wins that one, I'm going to be on the show next Monday, and he's going to say, Auburn did something Alabama didn't do.
Yes, I am.
Beat A&M. We'll see.
Oh, man. Well, you know, I'm looking at this matchup against A&M, and I'm saying kind of what you were saying a few weeks ago, Jeremy, is that, look, the winner of this team or winner of this game may only score 10 points. Now, I know that's an exaggeration, but still, you're looking at Auburn in conference play right now, only scoring about 25 a game. A&M's defense is still really solid. Auburn's defense should be able to hold Calzada. I think this could potentially be a really low-scoring game. It's going to be fun, though, because the CBS 2:30 kick between in games like these, it's when you want Brad Nessler or Vern Lundquist on the call.
To be fair, A&M has also had the benefit of playing these two Eastern Divisional opponents the last 2 weeks.
Correct.
Missouri and South Carolina, you know. So I think some of A&M's statistics right now, both offense and defense, are inflated. Auburn has not had that benefit. Auburn has actually had to play probably the toughest power conference slate that a team would have to have played at this point in the year. They've played all the best teams in the SEC West and the best team in the SEC East and a team that took Ohio State to the wire this past weekend. And that was a fully healthy Penn State team at the time. And just Auburn, statistically, it's not telling the whole story about Auburn, and it's definitely not telling the whole story about A&M after the last couple of weeks.
No, and I agree with you on that point. But also, I mean, if you look at that last run that Ole Miss just had to roll through, I mean, they had a tough stretch rolling to Auburn, get beat. Man, Zach Calzada got to play two defenses that let him see the field very well. It was a 21-0 game against Missouri in the first quarter. They beat up on South Carolina, which they should have done. They're also not really trying to run the score up. They've had a lot of injury problems, too. They're trying to get guys back healthy. Now Jimbo Fisher has a bye week. I don't know. If it wasn't after a bye week, I'd probably take Auburn just outright if A&M didn't have a bye week last week. And I think it's still going to be very close. Auburn can easily win this game. Is Auburn going to be able to run the ball against the sixth best rushing defense in the league? And we'll see. A&M's defense is getting a little better. Offense is helping that defense out, which it did not do earlier in the year. A lot of punts. It's going to be a fun one.
Let's take a quick break. And on the other side of it, we'll wrap up our number one of On the Line. Wrapping up our number one of On the Line, Lance Daw, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. If you've missed any of the first hour of the show, you can go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. We've got it everywhere. If you'd like to subscribe, give a review, we would really appreciate that. So wrapping up hour number one here, Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports also joining us. Jeremy, I want to ask you a couple more Alabama-related questions. Like we mentioned, LSU's coming to play Alabama, or rather they're going to Baton Rouge, I believe, later this weekend. You've got New Mexico State, Arkansas, and then Auburn. You mentioned the offensive line, but something else that I think is also a potential issue for the Alabama Crimson Tide, it's something that Noah mentioned earlier in the show, is the defense giving up about 24 points a game in conference play. What would you like to see out of the defensive unit over these final four games? Where would you like to see them improve?
Hold on, I've got to add something. It's not about 24 a game. It's about 25 a game. Ooh. Just to rub that in a little bit. It's 24.8 points allowed per game.
And excuse me, it is at home for Alabama this weekend. I got confused. But yeah, defensive improvements, Jeremy.
Just don't bust. I mean, nobody busts coverage against Alabama. It's like every week we watch, Alabama's the one that's doing it. They're grinding out 17 play drives. And
I don't know if I wouldn't say nobody does it. I mean, Tennessee put a linebacker on Jameson Williams. No,
that may not be a bust. That might be a bad play call.
That's true. That's
but
true.
But that's not, I mean, Alabama, there's just guys running wide open, and sometimes you scratch your head. And there was two in the A&M game. There was two against Tennessee. I won't even say Josh Jobs was a bust. He wasn't looking. I mean, he just wasn't paying attention. I mean, if you take those away, and I know you can't take them away, but you can fix them. It isn't like somebody's running for 350 yards down your throat. I mean, Tennessee didn't even get to the 65-yard mark, and they were averaging 250 per game.
How much of this is just a lack of a sense of urgency? Because Nick Saban was about to lose his mind to that Tennessee game, offense and defense. I mean, there's literal mental lapses out there on the football field often.
Yeah, and that's a problem, and that's why I think that I think Alabama may have all three new coordinators next year. There was a former Alabama player that was doing a podcast that I was listening to, and he was saying that, you know, he watches the games and he gets the game, and I won't say his name, but he was saying Bill O'Brien, he's not doing anything creative. He's not doing anything that says it's like all he had to do was open Steve Sarkisian's playbook and do the same stuff, and you're gonna score. Sarkisian's still running the same stuff and he's scoring. So I think they gotta fix the bus. They got to play a little better on offense. Before we get out of here, I want to say 27-23 Auburn at Kyle Field.
All right. Love the score prediction there, Jeremy. Really appreciate you taking the time to stop by and talk with us a little bit of Alabama football. I will say real quick, before the end of hour number one, all of this talk about undisciplined football, it's been the issue in Iron Bowls in the past when Alabama's lost. Could be something interesting to look at down the line.
On the Line, live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7, or online on foxsports983.com and espnau.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390. Or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Hour number two of On the Line, Lance Daw, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. If you want to call into the show, 334-321-1390 is the number to dial, or you can text us at 334-564-1840. Intern Sting behind the controls with us today, Making Headlines, our daily segment we have in hour number two of the show. Want to start off the Making Headlines segment here with a little Auburn basketball news. But first, Noah, a lot of great college football this weekend, but some fantastic high school football as well. Who is our high school football player of the week?
This week's Point Broadband High School Player of the Week is Lee Scott Academy's Tate McKelvey. The senior quarterback led the team with 154 rushing yards and a touchdown, adding 52 yards through the air and a touchdown pass in the Warriors' 31-17 win over Morgan Academy. He was also second on the team in receiving yards with 15. Lee Scott finished the regular season at 7-2 overall, with a home playoff game against Bessemer Academy coming up this Friday.
Tate McKelvey, your Point Broadband High School Player of the Week. Point Broadband, smarter, faster fiber internet. Point-broadband.com.
It sounds like every time you tell me about Tate McKelvey and his statistics, just either they're talking about the Player of the Week or outside of it, he kind of sounds like a John Rhys Plumlee type of guy, where he's going to run all over your defense, but he's going to do it from the quarterback position. Would you say that's fair, or are you thinking of a different comp?
He's better than John Rhys Plumlee.
Better than John Rhys Plumlee.
Compare John Rhys Plumlee to Tate McKelvey.
All right. I love it. Making headlines here, Auburn basketball landed the commitment of Chance Westry, a four-star small forward / shooting guard out of Hillcrest Prep in Phoenix, Arizona. I believe he's originally from Pennsylvania, but then he moved, he transferred to play with Hillcrest in Arizona. Number three player overall in the state of Arizona, number nine small forward nationally, according to 24/7 Sports. This is a big get for the Tigers, and I want to, in my mind, you know, I think Justin Powell was more of a shooter than this guy. It seems like this guy's shooting about mid-30s is his clip. But it seems like Auburn's getting a player that is very similar in build and style of play to that of Justin Powell.
I would agree with that, because I saw a lot of point guard ability in Justin Powell. And although he's listed as a small forward / shooting guard on 247 Sports, although that may be the case, I think he also has the ability to play point guard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a different way than Alan Flanagan. Like, I think it would fit if he played point guard. He can be a 6'6". And that's what's so intriguing about this commitment for Auburn, is that when have we ever seen the oversized point guard, or the abnormally large point guard? You know, we've always seen the undersized. We've never seen the 6'6" point guard. This is Lonzo Ball like size, you know, and that changes things for Auburn, because this has been a common criticism that I've had of Auburn. And it's just the fact of the matter. Teams have defended Auburn really well, I believe, over the last couple of years off of screens and off the pick and roll game, because Auburn's had undersized guards. They have a hard time if that they're okay with leaving the roll man open, because the point guard will not be able to get the ball up or around these larger defenders. Mississippi State's a team that I always cringe when Auburn's going to play them, mm-hmm. especially when Auburn's had undersized guards, because Mississippi State has had 6'3", 6'4", backcourts on average. They've had really large backcourts, and Mississippi State's known for playing really good defense as well. So what happens a lot of times is Auburn struggles, I believe, with larger backcourts from a defensive standpoint. Auburn gets clamped a lot of times against those teams. Westry is one of those players that can kind of change that a bit, because he is somebody that can handle the basketball. I'm excited to see this guy. I think he's an immediate impact player and a potential future NBA player.
According to 24/7 Sports, like you mentioned, he could also potentially play a little bit of point guard for the Tigers. Again, not the most consistent shooter, according to 24/7 Sports, says that they would like to see him develop that shot a little bit more, also add a little bit more weight. Like I mentioned, 6'6", 190, has a little bit of wiggle, does drive well, has a good mid-range. Just an overall, I think, just an athlete for the Tigers. Again, talking about the versatility of this kid and talking about the fact that he's 6'6", and could play potentially three different positions on roster. And then, like you mentioned, I'm intrigued to see what this kid does for Auburn defensively, because you talk about Auburn's ability to defend other guards and play offense themselves against teams like Mississippi State. Mississippi State, they've struggled, I think, in the past. I agree with you. So having a guy that's 6'6", and can distribute the basketball, can shoot a little bit, and then also maybe potentially play a little bit of defense, I think is really exciting. Just an all-around athlete I'm looking at with Chance Westry.
There's a lot to like about this commitment, and I don't think Auburn's done. You know, there are other guys that you're looking at for this class, like a Jairus Walker. As Christian Clemente told us this past week, Jairus Walker, it looks like it's down to Auburn and Houston, but it is a three-team race still, Alabama, Auburn, and Houston in that race. And as I said last week, Auburn fans are hoping anybody, but if it's not Auburn, just please not Alabama, you know what I mean? Because you don't want to have to play against this guy in the league who 6'8", 220. The PF next to his name doesn't stand for power forward. It stands for point forward. This guy can handle the basketball. He does share some resemblance to a certain Zion Williamson. He's not nearly as good. He's not nearly as explosive, but he is, he's definitely an explosive player, and he is a star. I'm just saying, Zion Williamson was a
was an athletic freak, something that we hadn't really seen before at his position in the college game. Juris Walker definitely shows some resemblance to that, and I think he would be a huge get for Auburn. I don't know where Auburn goes if they don't get Juris Walker. I don't know if they decide to park it for the rest of this class and then just decide to go through the transfer portal. You know, of course, Zion Cruz is still out there, hasn't committed. Of course, I know Auburn didn't really know if they wanted Zion Cruz. You know, I just don't know if Auburn decides to add another freshman to this team if they miss on Juris Walker. That's something we'll have to ask Christian Clemente when we see him on Friday.
Man, you're talking about point forwards and Juris Walker and Zion Williamson. Man, forget them. What about Sim? What about Simeon Bowers? He is the original point forward right there. He is forget Zion. I would
rather litmus test for all point forwards in the game of basketball.
Exactly. Give me Bowers any day of the week. I kid. But for real, Juris Walker would be a huge pickup. Also, don't forget Trey Donaldson is currently a part of this class. Auburn 35th nationally now, according to the 24/7 sports rankings, sixth in the SEC in terms of basketball recruiting. Chance Westry and Trey Donaldson in that class. Another headline here, the Atlanta Braves dropped Game 5 of the World Series 9-5 to the Houston Astros. I see Sting immediately turning on his mic. Sting, what are your thoughts?
I'm surprised. I am. What?
You say you're not, Noah?
I'm not surprised. I expected the Braves to lose yesterday.
Even after that grand slam, Sting texted us and said, I will be off the line tomorrow. Yeah. And I meant to respond and say, no, this game's not over.
This is not just my opinion. This is the opinion of also other Braves fans that I've talked to today. We all expected the Braves to lose after the grand slam.
I was not feeling confident even after that point. I, for some reason, just had a weird feeling. I'm like, I don't know if we're going to be able to pull this one out. It was a talking point heading into this World Series, right, about how important it'll be for Atlanta to sustain offense. And we were saying, well, they really like to hit a lot of home runs, and we've seen that this series. But also, like you've mentioned, Sting, the way that Houston likes to operate is they get those base hits, and they get those bases loaded, and they just kind of start cranking everybody home.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I mean, and that's what Houston did really well last night. I mean, I was a little bit crushed after that grand slam because I was just kind of thinking, well, I mean, maybe there's just nothing you can do to stop the Braves. This is their destiny. They're the team of destiny, and they're gonna win. They're gonna win no matter what you do. I mean, it certainly looked like that in the last two games in Atlanta. What almost getting no hit, and then just I don't even know what that was in game four. I'm still kind of processing that. But anyway, yeah. As far as they came in with their game plan, had a lot of RBIs, and I just want to point out Zach Greinke, my king, as a pitcher, coming in to pinch hit and getting a hit. Dude's batting .667 in this series.
Oh, man.
Yeah, a pitcher.
Pain. You still sticking with Astros in seven now?
Yes.
All right.
I am.
All right. Wow. Okay. Astros in seven. Atlanta going to choke once more. Interesting. Noah, what do you think?
I just didn't, not to say that the Braves didn't go for this. I mean, they went to win, but when I found out that Tucker Davidson was starting, you look at the pitchers that they used, it's not like the Braves unloaded like their best pitchers in this ball game. I mean, AJ Minter only went an inning. They were content. Once the game you felt like was trending in a direction that was out of reach, even though you were still within three or four runs, they kept Drew Smyly in to continue to get pelted because you're like, yeah, we can afford to lose Drew Smyly to some rest for, you know, hopes of having our best guys for game six. Like, you didn't see Tyler Matzik in this game. Like, the Braves did not. When this thing was 5-4 Braves, they had Minter on the mound, and you were thinking, okay, depending on how these next couple of innings go, might be how they end up using the bullpen, and then Minter gave up the runs that ended up sealing the defeat. And once the Braves fell behind by three runs, it was like, okay, we need to prepare for the rest of this series because today may not be our day. And you had given up eight runs. It was time to say, yeah, today probably was not our day.
And I will say, too, for at least for game six, the very least, I know I just said Astros in seven, but Martin Maldonado and Marwin Gonzalez combined for five RBIs last night. That was the difference in the game. There's a 0% chance that happens again. Zero.
Let's head to the phone lines now, 334-321-1390. And Specter is on the line with us. What's going on, Specter?
Yeah, I want to talk to you guys in the last hour, but it didn't work out that way. Just to mention something about the Braves, I think it's still in their favor. The odds of them winning are still higher than Houston is winning. So don't give up on the Braves just yet.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think in terms of like the odds makers and stuff, I think the Braves still are favored to win the World Series.
Yeah. Let me go back in time, maybe about 15 minutes when y'all were talking at the end of the last hour.
Go for it.
I was wanting to talk to you about something I read in an article I read. It was written in September of 21, just a month ago. And whoever did this article, I don't know how they came about it, but they rated the college football coaches. And I don't know how far they went back, but they went back before you guys were born. But I'm going to tell you how they rated them now. Number one coach would be the worst coach, okay? You got that?
Yeah.
So the higher the number, the better you are.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just keep it relevant to this SEC. Tommy Tuberville came in at 47.
Hmm.
Mark Richt came in at 45. These are overrated, most overrated coaches. Mark Stoops comes in at 42. Houston Nutt, 38. Dennis Franchione, you guys remember him, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Came in at 32. Charles McClendon was a long-time LSU coach. Came in at 26. Will Muschamp at 14. Brett Bellamy came in at 12. Ron Zook of Florida came in at 8. Gene Chizik came in at number 4. Guess who was the number one overrated coach?
Don't tell me it was Malzahn.
Negative.
Who was it?
Any other guesses?
You got me, Specter. Who is it?
Lane Kiffin.
There you go. Yeah, like Noah was talking about earlier, just the decision-making, and Jeremy was talking about earlier, the decision-making for Lane Kiffin has definitely been questionable, and it's cost them not only momentum but potential wins, I think, in their two losses this season.
Absolutely. I'm an Auburn fan, but I couldn't believe the fourth down goals that he was going for in the game.
Yeah, there were two times where it's like, dude, just kick a field goal. And like Jeremy was mentioning earlier, like you could have kicked a field goal to make it 23-28 and potentially come back and score and take the lead in that game. Like you had the opportunity to swing the momentum dramatically in your favor, and apparently the analytics won out in Lane Kiffin's heart, and he's just content to go for it on fourth down all the time. I don't understand it, especially whenever you have points that are right there in front of you. In the second half, Auburn wasn't really able to do a whole lot offensively. I mean, just kick a field goal, get the ball back, and give your offense an opportunity to take the lead.
Yeah, you got to keep your team in the game. Okay, that's what I needed to talk to y'all about. I got to run real quick.
Appreciate it, Specter. That was Specter on the line with us. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. Yeah, interesting stuff there. Most overrated coach, Lane Kiffin.
I still think he's overrated at this point.
Yeah.
I've kind of alluded that to that a little bit this year, but he kept winning, and so I was like, I'll just kind of hold off on this. But I've said this time and time again. When have we, other than Florida Atlantic, and you know, I can't blame him. He took a better job, and he did win games at Florida Atlantic, but that's also at the Group of Five at a Power Five program in his over the course of his head coaching career. When have we seen Lane Kiffin either, you know, finish something at a school? Like, when have we seen the end product a good thing? Like, when have we seen it finally get to the point where it's like when a coach comes to a new place, you're like, we're going to build this thing up to be a winning program. When have we ever seen him do that?
I don't think we have.
Exactly. And so I still hold that as a question about if that can be achieved at Ole Miss, a place that where you look at its, you know, last previous coaching stints, Hugh Freeze obviously had it going really well. And then we all know how that ended. And that ended for other reasons that were kind of non-football reasons. But you also could say that some of those non-football reasons were the reasons why they were able to get some of those players in-house to be able to achieve what they did achieve. I think Ole Miss is a very difficult place to win in the SEC. It just is. When you got Alabama and Auburn right next door to you, and Mississippi State's not a fertile ground for recruiting, it's very difficult to win there. And I think Lane Kiffin is the kind of coach that brings the type of scheme. I think Lane Kiffin's a good fit at Ole Miss for the reasons that he brings an offensive scheme that can help a team win. As long as he can get a quarterback in, a good quarterback, and he can get some athletes in there on offense, he can run this scheme
that is he's going to be able to scheme things for his offensive players to make them better than they actually are. And I alluded to that last week, but he's still not going to beat the teams that recruit the trenches better than him because he's not going to be able to run the ball. And we all know what that looks like when you're not able to run the ball successfully. And he wasn't able to run the ball successfully against Auburn on Saturday. There was a reason why Auburn had win streaks over Arkansas and Ole Miss this year and everybody else, the sexy upset picks this year coming into the season, and why folks everywhere were picking Auburn to go 5-7 or 6-6, and we scoffed at that all offseason. Now we're looking smart, and people are still reading all those folks' content, which is ridiculous. But the idea that all of a sudden these teams were going to elapse a team that consistently recruits better than those other teams, I just don't I didn't buy that was going to happen. There's a reason why Auburn had those win streaks, and I didn't expect that to change this year. Now, will those teams every once in a while beat Auburn? Yeah, that'll happen. But with consistency, Auburn wins against those teams, and there's a reason for it. And this year, I still saw those things in this Auburn program, and I still saw those things in Arkansas and Ole Miss. And Lane Kiffin's the right coach at Ole Miss, but I also don't think that people should expect Lane Kiffin to win 10, 11 games every year at Ole Miss either. I think if Ole Miss can go 8-4, 9-3 on a regular basis, people in Oxford should be happy.
I agree. Yeah, I agree with that. And then also on top of that, talking about, you know, the way that this Auburn team was projected to play this season, not only, like you mentioned, do they have a lot of talent still on roster, I think a lot of people were just trying to figure out where this coaching staff was in terms of game plan and how they were going to be able to elevate this team past just their talent alone. And it's something that we, because we were close to the program, thought is like, well, it seems like they're doing all the right things, and we expect it to turn into 8 or 9 wins. I believe at the beginning of the season, we both said 9-3, but for different reasons. I said Auburn would lose to LSU. You said Auburn would beat LSU, I believe. But regardless, we both had higher expectations, I think, than the national media did of this team, and a lot of it has to do with the way that the coaching staff has performed. Let's get one more headline in here real quick, and then we'll take a break. TCU head coach Gary Patterson resigned as head coach of the Horned Frogs. He's been there for forever, and TCU and Patterson agreed to mutually part ways just yesterday.
This is crazy because – and not crazy that I decided to move on. I've been asking myself for a little while. I was like, when is that – domino going to fall? When is Gary Patterson, when are they going to move on? Because TCU has been struggling since about 2000, since the last time I think they were good was 2014, when they had Trayvon Boykin at quarterback. I don't think they were that good in 2015, and they really haven't had any standout seasons since 2014. And
they had a really good year with Kenny Hill a few years ago.
Oh yeah, that's right.
But since then, yeah, they haven't really been at the level.
Fine, really good year. Like what? Yeah. What did they do?
11-3 in 2017. It was the year that they, I believe, they came back in the Alamo Bowl against Oregon, right?
Ooh, was it that? It might have been that long ago.
Might have been the 2015 game.
That was the year they came back in the Alamo Bowl.
So there you go.
Still though, these are their seasons since 2012, going back from 2020 all the way back to 2012. 6-4, 5-7, 7-6, 11-3, 6-7, 11-2, 12-1, 4-8, 7-6. You know, there's just too many losing seasons in there, too many losses in there, and too much inconsistency. Whereas you look at the heyday of TCU, you look at that 05 through like 2014, 2015 stretch, like I was talking to you guys about. That's a time period where Gary Patterson won 5 conference championships, 1 in the Big 12, 4 in the Mountain West. He won a Rose Bowl, had an undefeated season. He had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 11-plus win seasons. 8 11-plus win seasons across that stretch. And he was winning bowl games, might I add. He did win the Peach Bowl. He had a narrow loss in a Fiesta Bowl to Boise State back in 09. He won the Rose Bowl. He wasn't winning like bad bowl games. I mean, there were some subpar bowl games in there, just by virtue of playing in the Mountain West, but he won big bowl games. Like, people can't say, oh, TCU was playing easy schedules. They won big bowl games too. Gary Patterson is a good head coach. He's a very good head coach. Total record as a head coach at TCU. I'll pull that up, but I know it's a great win percentage for him. I don't have it exactly in front of me.
181 and 79.
I mean, that's a good head coach, man. And how old is Gary Patterson right now? Because he's older than he looks.
That's a good question. He was born, he's 61 years old.
Yeah. So, I mean, is there, you know, is he
going to take a break from coaching? Is he going to retire? Is he going to
be an analyst on Alabama staff?
Yeah, is he going to go to the Nick Saban rehabilitation
home
coaching
for wayward
staff?
Coaches?
What'd you say?
Nick Saban's home for wayward coaches.
Yeah, is he going to be in line for a major job that is open right now? I think LSU and USC can do a lot worse.
I was just about to say,
Patterson.
Go LSU, right? I was going to say I would go for another purple team that's going to be looking for a coach after this season to hire him.
And I think LSU can do a lot worse than Gary Patterson, because Gary Patterson punched above his weight class at TCU, and TCU is not the first choice of many recruits in the state of Texas. It's just not. It's a smaller school. Even though it's in the Big 12, it still didn't really elevate the brand as far as recruiting is concerned. And that will be an indictment of Gary Patterson. Can he recruit even in the SEC? But what I do know about Gary Patterson is that he can win even with a lower echelon of talent. And he was able to elevate that TCU program. We know he's able to build a program and sustain it. It just ran its course at TCU. And I doubt LSU will go that way with Gary Patterson. But I'll tell you, somebody is going to get, if he continues to coach, somebody will get an excellent coach and they are going to win.
Let's take a quick break, and on the other side, we're going to give some of our Saturday takeaways from some interesting matchups across college football. You're listening to On the Line. Back on the Line, Lance Dahl, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. If you want to call into the show, 334-321-1390 is the number to dial, or you can text us at 334-564-1840. In this very short segment here, want to get to some of our Saturday takeaways. Want to start in the Big Ten, in a game where a lot of people, including myself, thought this could potentially turn into a blowout. It was a little bit closer than that. Ohio State 33, Penn State 24. Up until the fourth quarter, I believe this game was a lot closer than that even. And this was a game where Penn State, it kind of feels like James Franklin tried to win his team back.
I was shocked to see this thing was close, as you were, and I don't know how to peg that for Ohio State. I think Ohio State is better than they were earlier in the year, as we suspected about this team when we were previewing this game last Friday. I said this team's different than where they were when they played Minnesota and Oregon in weeks 1 and 2. Since then, they hadn't really played anybody. They had kind of quietly went about their work, dominating teams. I'm still trying to assess Ohio State and see if they are capable of winning the national championship, if they're capable of pushing if they're capable of pushing Georgia, if they're capable of pushing whoever comes out of the SEC as champion. I think they're getting there. Penn State is a good football team when healthy. And I think when they play hard, not like they did against Illinois, I think when they play hard and they get up, they're a tough team to beat. But this was in the shoe. And Ohio State didn't really break away. I'm kind of shocked Penn State scored 24 points. Granted, they had them at, it was a 17-10 ball game at halftime. Ohio State outscored them 14-3 in the second quarter. You thought maybe they were about to pull away from it, but C.J. Stroud was 22-34, 305 yards, a touchdown. That's like a Bo Nix stat line against like an Ole Miss defense. You're going to get a lot of yards, but he didn't do a whole lot as far as scoring touchdowns were concerned. We know Ohio State can run the ball very well with Travion Henderson. He's been a stud this year, had 152 yards on the ground, a touchdown, 5.4 yards per carry. I just thought with this receiving corps that had Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, they would have done more than what they've done this year in the passing game. But Penn State's got some good players on the back end. I think what Saturday told me about the Big Ten is that Ohio State is the best team in the Big Ten, but I don't know by how much. Apparently right now it's by about 9 points.
Apparently so. Also want to point out in this game, you know, Penn State had more first downs. They were 11 of 16 on third down, had more passing yards. But the two things that really stood out in this game, the inability to run the football, only 33 rushing yards, 1.1 yards per carry, and then three turnovers for Penn State. It's really what kind of gave this game over to Ohio State. So, yeah, I'm surprised. Go ahead.
That is a big flip from what we saw at Ohio State's run defense earlier in the year. They held it to 1.1 yards per rush, whereas Oregon beat them by running the football.
So really surprising stuff there in terms of how close this game was. Again, was not expecting this matchup to be particularly close after seeing what Penn State did against Illinois, but that's just kind of the way college football has gone this season. Some teams, they have bad weeks, and then they bounce back, and they have really good weeks immediately following that. We've seen that specifically. If you're here in Auburn, you've seen that quite a bit. After the Georgia State game, we got to see Auburn go from their lows to beating Arkansas and Ole Miss after losing to Georgia and getting a win against LSU as well. For this Ohio State team, you look at the schedule remaining at Nebraska, Purdue at home, Michigan State at home, and then at Michigan. Look, those last two games of the week for Ohio State should be absolutely phenomenal. We're going to talk about the Michigan State-Michigan game later on in the show, but man, you look at this Ohio State team, they are going to, much like we've talked about with a lot of teams so far this season, they're going to really have to prove themselves in the back half of this season, this final stretch here. And I think they were doing that two nights ago, against Penn State, regardless of how Penn State might have fallen off. On the other side of this break, we've got more of On the Line coming your way.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Back on the Line, Lance Dahl, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. I want to continue giving some of our Saturday takeaways. A lot of great college football over the weekend, including Auburn's huge win over Ole Miss. If you want to call into the show, give your thoughts on that game. Give your thoughts on Auburn's upcoming game against the Texas A&M Aggies. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. Going to keep it right here in the Big Ten. We talked about it a little bit before we went to break. Michigan State and Michigan. Man, what a game this was. I think if you had told me, if you had come to me and said, look, this game is going to be like 17-13. It's going to be rainy. It's going to be wet and cold. It's going to be a dogfight. There's not going to be a lot of points scored. I probably, before you had come to me, I probably would have bought that narrative already. And if you had come to me and it said that's how the game went, I would have bought it then. But 37-33 was the final score. A lot of points scored. Cade McNamara, the Michigan quarterback, was slinging it around the yard. These two teams offensively had a lot of explosive plays, and they just kind of kept beating each other up. And it was Kenneth Walker and Michigan State at the end of the day that got it done. Walker had 5 rushing touchdowns, and I know that, you know, the Heisman ceremony is still still down the road, and we still got some more college football to play. But man, if we're talking about Heisman moments where you just kind of feel like that was that kind of moment, Kenneth Walker certainly had it against Michigan on Saturday.
100%. The thing is Michigan State going to be able to run the table? And right. I still left this game. I don't know how Michigan lost it. I really don't. I'm trying to figure it out. 552 total yards to Michigan State's 395. 26 first downs to Michigan State's 20. They were 8-for-17 on third down to Michigan State's 4-for-13. They had 406 passing yards to Michigan State's 196. Peyton Thorne for Michigan State turned the ball over twice, didn't have any touchdowns. Cade McNamara had nearly 400 passing yards, had 3 touchdowns to 1 pick. Running the football, it wasn't like Michigan was bad. They had 146 rushing yards to Michigan State's 199. All Michigan State did well in this game was run the football. I'm trying to figure out how Michigan State won this football game. I really am. And I think it just came down to grit and making some big plays here and there down the stretch. Lance, help me figure this out. How did Michigan State win this game?
Well, if you were tuning in when it was
30-14
in the third quarter, you probably tuned back out. And that's what I did. But I came back in the fourth quarter right as Michigan State was tying it up. A 58-yard run from Kenneth Walker. And, you know, it was just a back-and-forth game in the fourth quarter from that point forward. But I think what I'm looking at, it's kind of what you said there, Noah. It's just grit and running the football. Kenneth Walker, late in that game, like I mentioned, had that 58-yard touchdown run, a 23-yard touchdown run with 5 minutes left in that game. He was the offense, essentially, and it was just big plays down the stretch for Michigan State. They were able to take haymaker after haymaker that Michigan threw at them. The Spartans rallied late, and it was just coming around, running the football, getting the, I think forcing Michigan to a field goal in that fourth quarter was huge. Yeah. But again, it's just the little play here and there late, finding ways to come back just running the football. And, you know, just that entire statement that I just made, I bet Gus Malzahn is somewhere smiling like, yeah, that's how we do it right there. Run the football effectively. But yeah, that's really what I kind of chalk it up to. Like you mentioned, you just ran down the overall box score there from these two teams, the team stats. And it looks like Michigan should have won this game on paper, but it's kind of like what Gus Johnson on the call was alluding to. Is like this team wanted it. They really badly wanted this game. And they were just more determined, I think, at the end of the day. And again, what a phenomenal game between the Wolverines and the Spartans.
A lot of pressure was put on Cade McNamara to win this game late. Mm-hmm. When Michigan was up 30-14, what helps Michigan State come back is the fact that one of the best backfields in college football really was not able to stretch its legs. Hassan Haskins, 59 yards, 4.2 yards per carry. That's not good enough. Blake Corum. So the player that some would consider the best player out of the backfield, 45 yards, 3.5 yards per carry. Once again, that's not good enough. And when they were up by 30, when they're up 30-14, they weren't able to run the ball with consistency enough. A couple punts happened, then a couple drops later, Michigan State's got the game tied. Now all of a sudden, you're back on level footing. And I do not think that Michigan State is the better team. I think that Michigan is the better team. And my reasoning for that is just look at the quarterback play. Cade McNamara, 28 for 44, 383 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick. He outplayed Peyton Thornton, who was 19 for 30 for 196 yards, no touchdowns, 2 interceptions. But Michigan State has the best player on the entire field. And we saw what that can do, how that can tip a game in the favor, a close game, mind you, between these two teams. I think Michigan is overall the better team. And I actually think that they have a better chance of beating Ohio State. And they may actually be able to do it this year. I think Michigan can beat Ohio State. That was kind of my Big Ten takeaway on Saturday, was that Ohio State's probably going to lose another game. Michigan may be the team to beat them. And I think Michigan State could still have a couple of losses left. The Big Ten is going to eat itself. Wisconsin's good again. I don't know what's going on in the Big Ten. It's going to eat itself at the end. And the Big Ten champion will come away with one loss. I don't know which team that's going to be, but just because Michigan lost this game, I still think that the hierarchy in the Big Ten, and people may vehemently disagree with me on this, because the results, you can't lie with the results. I mean, Michigan State won this game, but I still believe this is how I would order these teams based on how I believe they are, how talented they are. I think Ohio State's number one right now, but it is very close. Michigan number two, and Michigan State number three, and they're all very close. But that is still how I would rank these teams 1-3 in terms of how I believe them to be and how good they are.
You look at the other division, the Big Ten West, talking about, you know, the end goal for whoever comes out of the East. By the way, Minnesota, 6-2 right now, 4-1 in conference, leads the Big Ten West. Really interesting stuff. PJ Fleck's got his team winning again.
Wisconsin's not done yet. Something else I want to break down in this game. Michigan State had 0 sacks and only 1 tackle for loss. I mean, how did they win this game? How? Michigan had 3 sacks, 3 tackles for loss, 7 pass deflections. I'm just trying to figure out how Michigan State won this game, and I'm trying to give evidence to substantiate the claim that I just made, that Michigan's the better team and that Michigan just found a way to lose this game rather than Michigan State win it. I mean, Michigan State did go out and win it because they had to come back from 16 down, but I still believe, leaving this game, that Michigan is the better team, and they may still win that division. I actually kind of left this game thinking, wow, Michigan's better than I thought they were. But I didn't leave the game thinking that Michigan State was better than I thought they were. I predicted Michigan State to win this game on Friday, but I thought that they had the better passing offense than Michigan going into it. I was wrong. Cade McNamara can do this thing. Michigan can win that division. If they get this type of performance, minus the interception, out of Cade McNamara, they get that level of efficiency that they did, and they can just run the ball a little bit better, which I think they'll be able to against Ohio State. They can get just a little bit better of a rushing performance and that type of effort out of Cade McNamara, Ohio State could lose.
They really could, and Michigan could go to the Big Ten title game.
And that would be a really awesome sight to see. Talking about the Big Ten West as well, another game here, Wisconsin victors over the Iowa Hawkeyes. 27-7 was your final score. The Badgers, you know, in this game, didn't think they were going to be able to get a lot done offensively. I said that Graham Mertz, who has been terrible essentially up until this point in the year, was not going to be able to do much. He still didn't do much in this game. 11 of 22, 104 yards, one touchdown, no interceptions. But
is that Calzada stat line?
It's these exactly. Something I was going to mention earlier when Jeremy was talking, it was like Zach Calzada still only completing like 55% of his passes. And in those two wins over South Carolina and Missouri, both their running backs, Spiller and A-Chain, had over 100 yards rushing. They're not going to do that against Auburn, and Calzada's not going to have a good day. Anyway, I digress back to this Wisconsin game. Wisconsin, it was classic Big Ten football. I mean, they just kind of went out there and essentially hit them in the mouth over and over until Iowa bent. Iowa did almost nothing on offense all day, only had 132 yards passing, only 24 yards rushing. Just a physical, dominating performance from the Wisconsin Badgers.
But, and we're talking about all these quarterback stat lines, none of them are the Spencer Petras stat line of 9 for 19 for 93 yards, no touchdowns and no interceptions, and a quarterback rating of 21.3 out of 100. You know, Spencer Petras, and I harped on this when Iowa was ranked in the top three, top two. I mean, y'all remember me talking about this. I said I was going to lose games, and I was just blown away that they beat Penn State, and that's mainly due to the fact that Sean Clifford went down with an injury. Iowa should be three losses, maybe more at this point, because they probably could have lost to Colorado State earlier this year. I've been telling everybody all year long, that offense is not good. It's not just not good, it's bad. Like, that's not an average offense. That is a bad offense. There have been far too many games this year where they have had less than 200 yards in a game. And this is another one of those games that falls into that category. They had 0.8 yards per carry. 0.8. 30 rushes for 24 yards and a touchdown. This is not a team predicated on throwing the football, and they have to run the ball to be successful. Right now, teams are queuing in on that, and they are killing them. Iowa, I'm trying to figure out, like, there are other wins on this schedule, but this is going to be a colossal come apart for Iowa after being ranked number two this year. The schedule is not easy. They have other losses on this schedule if this offense continues to play this way. They'll beat Northwestern. Northwestern's really bad. But Minnesota can beat them. Illinois, if they play like they did against Penn State, can beat them. And Nebraska can beat them, too. This thing is wide open for Iowa to still find a way to finish 8-4, 7-5 with these last four games coming out. And that is a big come apart in the second half of the season where they had some big wins early on. And if they played Iowa State again right now, they'd lose. Iowa would lose. I mean, Wisconsin and the Big Ten West is absolutely fascinating. Who is going to win that division? Is it going to be, are we going to have a three-way tie at the end? Because Wisconsin still gets to play Minnesota at the end of the year. If Wisconsin wins out, it'll be a three-way tie. There will at least be a tie between Minnesota and Wisconsin. Purdue should have another loss in there too, because I think Purdue.
They're playing Michigan State and Ohio State, Purdue is, these next couple weeks.
Wisconsin, they control their own destiny because I think Purdue loses again. Wisconsin beats Minnesota that last game. Who knew that on rivalry week, Wisconsin-Minnesota, after the way that these seasons started, that game would be very important for potentially the college football playoff discussion. Not that those teams will go, but what team from the other side could they be ruining their hopes, you know? Like, that will be one to be watched on November 27th.
Absolutely, yeah. And this Big Ten West, as we were talking about earlier and we're talking about now, is just wide open. It should be a lot of fun. It's the perfect time in this year of college football to see just a little bit more chaos in another Power 5 conference. It's beautiful to see. We're seeing it in the ACC. We've seen it in the Pac-12. We're getting to see it now a little bit in the Big Ten, or at least in half of the Big Ten and the Big Ten West. I know that we're still trying to figure things out in the East, but it feels like the West is a little bit more wide open, at least at this point. Let's get a couple more games in here before we head to break. Georgia beats Florida 34-7. At one point in this game, I believe it was only 3-0, and within the span of like 5 minutes or so, Georgia then stretched the lead to like 24 because of a couple Florida miscues, and that they just didn't look back. Georgia didn't look great in this game. But they did what they needed to do, and that's kind of what they've done in a couple of games this season. You look at the game against Clemson, you look at this game against Florida, you look at the Auburn game even, where it's not like they're not playing perfect football. They're just simply more talented than the other team, and eventually it just wears down on them.
The question is somebody out there able to score enough on Georgia to beat them? Because if they can take a lead on Georgia, I don't know if this Georgia offense is forced into having to throw the ball to win games. I'm not sure if they can do it. Stetson Bennett was 10 for 19 for a touchdown, two interceptions, 161 yards. And this Florida team, we knew all they could do was run the football. Dan Mullen's in some real hot water right now. I told you after this week, on Friday, I said after this week, Florida, South Carolina, and Texas would all have the same record. They're all 4-4.
Oh, man, that is awesome. And in terms of what Florida's doing right now and what Dan Mullen is doing right now, he said earlier, and I believe this might have been taken out of context, but still I think it's just a very entertaining quote, talking about recruiting, and it's like, oh, we don't worry about recruiting right now. Like, we're in the middle of the regular season. We're just playing football. Let's talk about recruiting once it gets to recruiting season. I mean, it just doesn't look like he's got that program right now where it wants to be mentally, at least I don't think.
He seems to be very defensive. Mm-hmm. Post-game press conference, today's press conference, he seems to be on the defensive at this point. And it's crazy, man. Florida, we talked about LSU. We talked about Georgia years ago. But Florida is still the school to fire a coach that went to back-to-back SEC championships. And McElwain, things ended really poorly there. But don't sit here and think that Florida is exempt at this point from the coaching carousel, because things could get really bad in a hurry for Florida this year. There is still a wide open door for that team to shockingly finish 5-7. Do I think they should move on from Dan Mullen? No way, especially if they win out from here, which is they should. They should win out. They play South Carolina, Samford, Missouri, and Florida State. Four wins in a row will cure that. They win their bowl game. They finish 9-4. That is still very much so. That should happen. Florida should win out and finish 9-4. And then that will quiet all of this. But what is really, really condemning for Florida, we expected them to lose to Alabama and Georgia, but what is condemning for Florida this year is that they lost to Kentucky and LSU. And not that Kentucky's a bad football team. I don't think they're as good as we thought, but they're not a bad football team. They're a good football team. But you're Florida. And I don't care if you moved on from Kyle Trask and all the other talented players that you had. This is year four for Dan Mullen. By this point, you should have the program in a place where you're able to sustain losses. And what this year has proven is that he doesn't quite have the program in a place that can sustain the losses that he had last year, which were significant. You lost Kadarius Toney. You lost Kyle Pitts. You lost Kyle Trask. You lost some really good football players. But where has your recruiting had you at to have you prepared for this moment? And they obviously weren't prepared for this moment. They're 4-4. They play South Carolina on the road this week, which if they have another really poor offensive performance, South Carolina can hang with them. I don't think South Carolina is going to win. It's like a 20-point line right now, but it could be ugly going into the late stages of the game, especially if he's losing the locker room. They'll beat Samford. It'll get you to 5. And then you got a Missouri team that can score points. And if Florida could lose to LSU, they could lose to Missouri. And Florida State's playing better now, right now, too. That's a rivalry game. I mean, I think Florida's going to have to fight to get to 6 wins. But they honestly should win out. They should win all of their last 5 games because they shouldn't be that big of challenges. We're talking about South Carolina, Samford, Missouri, and Florida State. And Florida at 4-4 may very well have to fight to 6 wins this year.
Yeah, and just meanwhile, while we're talking about recruiting and how important it is, I mean, you've got Mullen saying something like that, and then Jimbo Fisher over in College Station, 5 minutes after beating number one Alabama, he's given a full-on pitch to a kid who just lied to him about being a recruit, who said that he was a recruit and wasn't. You guys see that story?
I did not.
Yeah, some kid snuck into the A&M locker room and said he was a kicker on a recruiting trip and ended up, within a couple of minutes, face-to-face with Jimbo Fisher, and Fisher gave him a whole pitch about what a great program they were, what they were building in College Station. The kid wasn't even a recruit.
Where'd you see that story at?
I can't remember exactly. It was all over the internet about the next week after. And then he said, like, I think he got into the stadium.
Don't believe everything you see on the internet.
It's real. Like, it's real. Like, A&M players have come out and said, yeah, we saw that guy in the locker room.
That is crazy. That's like
I think he was able to get in there. I think he had found somehow come upon a pass from like the week before that was expired, but they still let him in.
Interesting. Yeah, it was reported by Sports Illustrated. A fake recruit went viral, and he posted all about it on his TikTok. So there you go.
We'll talk about recruiting when we get to recruiting season.
Jimbo Fisher always recruiting, unlike Dan Mullen. Hey, let's take a quick break, and on the other side, we'll wrap up the Monday edition of On the Line. Wrapping up the Monday edition of On the Line, Lance Daw and Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. It's been a great show today. Really appreciate Spectre calling in, giving his thoughts on the Braves, giving his thoughts on Lane Kiffin being overrated. We were just talking during the break, Sting and I, and SEC Shorts, which they put out fantastic content on YouTube, put out a video just now titled Inside the Mind of Lane Kiffin on Fourth Down. Really going to have to check that out after the show ends. Really funny stuff. But we've got about a minute and a half left here on the show. Overall thoughts wrapping up this Georgia-Florida conversation with Dan Mullen and the future of the Florida Gators. Noah, you mentioned that you believe he's going to win out. Looking at Georgia, what did you see from them in this game?
I think it's still a team that, as you put it, is more talented than everybody they play, and they're just able to beat you hat on hat. They don't have to do anything special schematically. Offensively, they really haven't had any games put any direct pressure on them. They haven't had to come back. They lead all the time. It's just the nature of the game right now with Georgia, and they have to encounter somebody. Have they even played a good offense yet this year? That's the other thing I'm trying to figure out, because at the time, as much as Auburn was struggling to catch the football, Auburn was not a good offense back then. So have they played a good offense yet this year?
Well, let's look. Clemson's not a good offense. South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Arkansas, Auburn, Kentucky, Florida. They're going to play Tennessee here on the road in a couple of weeks. But outside of Tennessee, I mean, they've not really had to face a lot of really good offenses. And I'm interested to see, let's say they get matched up in the playoff with Oklahoma. How does that shake out? Because Oklahoma, I know they're kind of on a roller coaster right now, but at least they have the ability to score. So that's going to do it for the Monday edition of On the Line. We'll see you guys tomorrow. We've got a lot more to talk about in terms of what happened over the course of college football this past weekend.